Is being recorded.
Oh, welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. I am here with everyone's favorite guest, Matt Arett, because he is doing an incredible amount of work, really just prolific writing lately. And one of his most recent articles really caught my eye, and I wanted to have him on to talk about it. Thank you for joining me, sir.
Thank you for having me back on, Mel.
Oh, it's always my pleasure. I don't like to go more than a week without seeing you in this chaos. Last week, you had an article. It went pretty viral. I saw it. A lot of other aggregate sites were sharing it. It was called The High Cost of Blowing Up the World, Ukraine and the 2023 NDAA. Can you talk a little bit about what inspired you to write this article? Because I think it's really important and connects a lot of dots that people don't understand and how we got here.
Yeah, sure. Well, the thing that I guess provoked me was when I had read that the original $38 billion requested for more aid to be poured onto the powder keg known as Ukraine was actually met with $44 billion in actual money promised to Ukraine in various ways. So I was like, well, that's something. Let's try to figure out where this, what is this a part of? Where's this money going? Is there anything that we know about that? So obviously this comes in as a part of the broader omnibus bill, you know, the spending bill that sets the budget for 2023, which was an astronomical $1.7 trillion that was finally voted upon last minute, right during the holidays, right when people just want to go back to sleep and eat some turkey. So that's when they passed the $1.7 trillion spending bill. And of that, you had a record-breaking $858 billion defense bill going towards U.S. military interests. Now, of that $858 billion, the $44 billion promised to Ukraine was a part of that package. So overall, that's already $111 billion in total that we've poured into Ukraine, which is just a sacrificial lamb. I mean, you got to really feel for the Ukrainian people who are caught in this proxy war, which obviously has nothing to do with Ukraine. Just like, I mean, the people shedding crocodile tears over the big abuses of Muslims in Xinjiang. It's like, okay, sure. Even if everything we were being told by the Mockingbird press was all true, and all of the anti-China sanctions by Biden and Trudeau and the European Union, if all of that was legitimate, because China was actually hurting Muslims in Xinjiang, if that were true, why didn't we say anything to stop the wars that have killed millions and millions of civilians in Afghanistan, right, Iraq, you know, Libya, Syria, sponsored by the CIA, sponsored by U.S. taxpayer dollars? We didn't really do very much to stop that, or even Guantanamo. So frankly, we're being played, just like the Ukrainians are being played and used, just like the Kurds are being used in the proxy war in Syria, being promised, right, you know, that they're going to get their own Kurdistan government finally, as long as they keep on acting like you know, instruments of U.S. foreign policy. No, they're being lied to. They're all being flushed. They don't. The those who are controlling U.S. foreign policy don't care about Kurds, Ukrainians, people, Muslims in Xinjiang, Muslims in the world. They don't care about Americans. So it's all disposable. So I really wanted to just break that down, get across where this came from. Did it come from Biden? Did it come from Obama? Did it come before that? And sure enough, yes. So that was what I tried to just do as concisely as possible.
Yeah, you know, I was watching Loose Change, a documentary that I like and I recommend, came up, and we were watching it, and I had just read your article, and they talk about that 2000 document I guess it was Rumsfeld and Cheney, that changed how we in America focused on war, the goals. And it's a really shocking document. And you laid out some of the stuff in there. But at the time, you know, it was September 2000, and a lot was going on. And people, I don't think, really understood that at that point, Rumsfeld, Cheney, and the entire crew that went into the Middle East basically were saying that the U.S. was going to dominate the world, including cyberspace. And it kind of went unseen, because then we had the very unconstitutional, in my opinion, Patriot Act, which was, you know, was written way before that. And as far as I'm concerned, the Patriot Act was the end of basically our Bill of Rights in America and a lot of our constitutional rights, without people even stopping. And you and I have talked before about the trauma events, these big events that happen, and people get, just like, you know, COVID, people get lulled into kind of a following orders, going into, you know, just blinders on. And I think that event and that bill that you bring up in there is really important to revisit right now in looking at why we are in the situation we're in, where we are being portrayed in the world, which Mockingbird Media is not telling us, as this warmongering, endless war, corrupt country that has been on a nonstop warpath all these years for the benefit of only America.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're referring right now to the Rebuilding American Defenses report, which was the outgrowth of a very insidious think tank that too few people have, I think, properly come to appreciate, that was created in 1997 by a network. It's basically a nexus of a new variety of beings that were created or that came to power really under the helm of the Trilateral Commission of the 1970s, under the leadership of people like, you know, Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, who were both chiefs of staff under Gerald Ford. You had people like Paul Wolfowitz, who was brought in as team leader along with Paul Nitz of a group called Team B under that time too. It was very much integrated with Rand Corps, and basically what it was the expression of a viral infection of the Republican Party. And so there was an attempt to basically destroy any residues of nationalism and patriotism as expressed by great Republican patriots like Abraham Lincoln or McKinley or Garfield or Warren Harding. And so any of the Republicans that were working with John F. Kennedy or Franklin Roosevelt earlier against this transhumanist deep state agenda that had been trying to take over already many years earlier.
Right.
So this thing started taking over. The conduit select, like I said, involved people at the time like Cheney, Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, Irving Kristol and his son. And so they really arranged the entire doctrine of flexible response, the idea that limited thermonuclear war was something which should be considered and even done by the United States, even if they were not facing a nuclear threat. This was innovated by this Team B group that was basically brought in as outsider experts to make the argument that the CIA and official American intelligence had underestimated the actual ambitions and desires of the Soviet Union.
Right.
And at the time, there were still a lot more patriots within American intelligence that, I won't say that the CIA was ever a good institution, but you had good people within it who still had clout. And so they were looking at the facts in the 1960s, 70s. They were like, look, the Soviet Union appears to really just want to be left alone. That seems to be their primary goal, is to be left alone. And they don't want to have a one world government of a Soviet unipolarism. It seems like we're projecting that onto them. And it doesn't seem like they really do want to have first strike capabilities to destroy us. They don't seem to want that. Now, this other group, the Team B group I was mentioning, were brought in to make a counter case saying, no, you're wrong, you're naive. They actually do want that. That's why we need to break through to having new technologies that allow us to destroy them. And that's where the whole logic that Zbigniew Brzezinski, another Trilateral Commission member, cooked up, utilizing this group to try to suck the Soviets into a quagmire in Afghanistan. And how were they going to do that? Well, the U.S. was going to provide hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer money in Operation Cyclone 1979, which then provided the funding for the growth of radical madrasas in Pakistan, Afghanistan, sometimes with the help of our Saudi puppet allies.
Right.
That would radicalize a new generation of young Muslim men to go and become weaponized instruments on behalf of their handlers in the West that many of them didn't even know were providing them the weapons, the money, the support, in order to destabilize a very progressive Afghanistan government, which was allowing, you know, like, mass education for women in Afghanistan. Look at some of the pictures of like Afghanistan, 1977-78. It looks like New York.
Right.
Yeah. And that was all turned inside out. And as such, a pro-Russian government, which again was a very progressive government in Afghanistan, was destroyed. Their leader was assassinated. And what became Al-Qaeda was grown in this pit, and the Russians were sucked in to try to bring stability to a nation which is right in their underbelly, very weak spot for Russia. And it ended up zapping their energy. And Zbigniew Brzezinski later on said, around the same time that Project for New American Century was being created, that the biggest success he ever had was creating Al-Qaeda and destroying the Soviet Union in Afghanistan. So this group, they created the Rebuilding America Defenses report as a pre-9/11 strategy for the 21st century on how to maintain, and they're very clear that their ambition is not to have the U.S. working in harmony with other countries. They've envisioned the U.S. as being a neo-Roman Empire instrument of unipolar power, projecting its authority onto the nations of the world that must always be subdued and kept broken and weak to be exploited. The threat that they zero in on is the possible danger of a Russia-China-Iran alliance that can never be allowed to happen. And in it, they just break down exactly what needs to be funded and made priority, including the creation of a new branch of the military known as Space Force in order to extend war-making capabilities into space in order to destroy North Korea, Iran, China, Russia. They name it all. And biowarfare, they even include the need to turn biowarfare from terrorism into a political useful tool with a focus on putting money and support into ethnically targeted pathogens that could then be deployed by the Pentagon against ethnicities that you want a particular pathogen to destroy, which is what funds the BioShield Act that Dick Cheney then puts into play in the outgrowth of the fake anthrax attack inside jobs. So not loose change tackled the buildings going down, which is a great document if people haven't watched it. Right as the buildings were going down a week later, anthrax letters of weaponized anthrax only produced in a U.S. military facility, not even Fort Detrick, it's another one, I forgot the name, start showing up in senators and news agency buildings. A few people die, a lot of people get sick, and this becomes something which goes on for months. And it's discovered in hindsight, and books have been written about this was an inside job. It was done entirely with complicity of the same people that brought us 9/11 as another inside job to justify, as you pointed out, Joe Biden's bill, the Patriot Act, which Joe Biden bragged himself was modeled on his omnibus pseudo-Patriot Act of after the first 9/11 attack in 1993. Biden made his own bill, which at that time was defeated, and then they just retweaked it and then brought it back into play and made it what we know of today is the security state, and the BioShield Act. So Dick Cheney's BioShield Act, which justified the creation of a global biosecurity complex tied to the Pentagon and the military-industrial complex with over 320 biolabs, which Victoria Nuland says are not biowarfare. That's just biolabs for research purposes in Ukraine. No. All over China's perimeter, Russia's perimeter, Africa, Sierra Leone, South America, these things are everywhere in the world with opaque funding, no oversight. Nobody knows what the hell is going on. It's like the Ukraine budget or the Ukraine bailout of billions of dollars in Ukraine. And every time Marjorie Taylor Greene or somebody reasonable says, can we just look at where money is being spent? They're attacked like they're pro-commie Putin lovers. And it's like, well, how about we just look at the fact that we've done this destruction so much over these decades, and maybe we should be held accountable a little bit for some of this.
Yeah, and I don't think the people of the United States have any idea about any of this, and I strongly encourage everyone to not only we'll put a link to Matt's article, but go look at the September 2000 Rebuilding America Defense Act, Project for a New American Century, of course, think tank. But I have to say, I think that most people, this kind of went under the radar, or people weren't really paying attention, because you're talking about the trifecta of this, all the money that was missing at the Pentagon, 9/11, and then the anthrax attacks. Right?
Money was missing at the Pentagon. That's right. That was September 10th was the Pentagon audit.
It's unbelievable.
$2 trillion that they, for the first audit, that was September 10th released to the public, $2 trillion was unaccounted for of Pentagon spending. And then obviously something happened the next day that caused people to just forget about this really serious issue. And every single thing up until even November 2022, they did the sixth Pentagon audit. And once again, the Pentagon could not account for 65% of its budget. Where did it go? This is like nearly $2 trillion again. Where did it go? Like, nobody's asking the question. There's nobody pushing on that question.
Well, I think that's the biggest problem here, Matt, because I'm looking at this, even reading this, and everyone should go check this document out. But it says that they envision a future in which the United States is in complete control of land, sea, airspace, and cyberspace on planet Earth. It's actually in this document. And what you have to say is, who said that that was okay? I mean, did the American people understand that these warmongers, these people that went, I mean, because even in that Loose Change also, they talk about, and everyone's, I'm sure, that watches me has seen the Wesley Clark clip where he talks about going down to Rumsfeld's office after 9/11 and him like being, okay, so here's the list of everywhere we're going into. And he's saying, well, why are we going into Iraq? Or why are we going into here? And then it turns out, if you look back over those 20 years since, every single place that he mentioned, we've gone into, done regime change, caused, wreaked havoc. And it appears that this has all been a long game to where, because at right now, it does not feel like this is a successful strategy or that it's working out. It actually appears to be the downfall of our nation is started when those men decided that America would be the world enforcer or some kind of international empire. The American people didn't vote for that. That's not actually JFK was trying to do the opposite. So, I mean, are we to look back at that period of time, at that group of people? Because I say now, I don't believe there's two parties. I believe there's a uniparty. I think most people get that. But we talked on one show also about Eisenhower warning about the military industrial complex and bankers getting together. And when that happened, we'd be in big trouble. It does appear that this period of time at 2000 surrounding 9/11, including the Patriot Act, that America was usurped. Like from that point on, I think everything has been about completing this insane goal of imposing our will on the rest of the world. I mean, is that where we are? And how do we turn it around?
No, your point is very, very solid. That's nobody voted for this. This does not, it never expressed the will of the people. It always expressed the disdain of the people, how this particular oligarchical agency, which is not American in any way, hates the idea of American. They hate American people. They hate people in general. They're misanthropic, right? The idea of misanthropic is, your anthropos is like the Greek term for human. Misanthro is you anti-human. So it's an anti-human religious cult, which has been around for a long time, as people who watch your show know very well.
I know.
It's not new.
Right.
And they ultimately, my wife in her book on the empire in which the Black Sun never set has several chapters, which are really good on the origins of the neoconservatives as an ideology. That's a weird way I just said that, ideology. And in it, she goes through the anomalous fact of the Trotskyite origins, that all of the founders of this new cult of neoconservatism that really only emerged during World War II, really after Trotsky died, in the wake of Trotsky's death, who was effectively a leading deep state operative fascist working to create a pro-Nazi Russia, where he had networks within Britain, within Wall Street. He's the guy who like was sent to Wall Street to get the money to bankroll the Bolshevik Revolution that overturned the Romanovs. And basically it was a proto-color revolution. That, in my assessment, some people might not like that I just said that, but in my assessment, the Bolshevik Revolution, and Anthony Sutton is a researcher who did a lot of work on this.
Right.
He footnotes the hell out of this story, but Trotsky was the guy who was deployed by Lenin to get the money from Jacob Schiff, Paul Vorburg, all of the same characters who had just earlier, just a few years earlier, founded the Federal Reserve in America as part of the financial coup They were the same people who bankrolled the Japanese attack against Russia in 1904 that destroyed the Russian Navy, 75% of which of it. They were bankrolling also the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood and the Young Turk movement as well, which overturned the Ottoman Empire, created a zone of destabilization under the influence of the same Anglo-Venetian intelligence networks. That was the those are the agencies interfacing with Trotsky, who was a guy who had set up an entire network, a complex network in military, academia, bureaucracy in Russia, that was working with the Japanese fascists, the Nazis, the British fascists, the American fascists, to create, again, like I said, a pro-Nazi fascist Russia. That's where it was going to go. That didn't work out. That plan failed. So they put their new resources in a new approach. And people like Trotsky's personal secretary, James Burnham, becomes, in the 1940s, the founder of neoconservatism. People like Albert Volstetter, who goes on to found the RAND Corporation, which is the agency that brings in Team B, that brings in the entire imperial way of thinking, which was very foreign to the U.S. foreign policy before the 1940s. That was infused as a poison brought in by RAND Corps. He was a Trotskyite. Irving Kristol was a Trotskyite. All of these guys who then, because what does Trotsky want? What is Trotsky's big belief? Permanent war, permanent revolution, that we can have this utopic transhuman future society if we first purge humankind of our pesky traditions, belief in irrational things like God and
right.
religion and nationalism and family that are just keeping us from being reset like a video game. So the way you get that is through shock therapy, trauma, and purgative violence. And you maximize that through permanent war, permanent revolution. People like the Bakunites as well are big into this stuff. And when you look at the, so you're like, okay, how do radical dialectic materialist atheists like that, how do they all then become hyper-Christian fundy right-wing conservatives? How does that happen?
I don't know. It's crazy. They never believed
in Christianity. They looked for a particular spin on Christianity that had political, geopolitical effects, which would effectively bring about the same sort of effect of a scorched earth outcome
yeah.
that was ultimately what the Trotsky atheists always wanted anyway, which was basically this interpretation that, you know, it's, and this is the George Bush Jr. rendition of Christianity, right? Which is, well, you know, if God willed, or you know, willed that the world be burned in the Bible at the end times, isn't it human beings, good Christians, who should do God's will and be instrument of God? Well, if God wills it, shouldn't we facilitate said burning of the earth in the form of Armageddon? Maybe that's the way we're going to bring the Messiah back, if we're the ones doing it and helping the process along. Now, I mean, that's insane. Like, God will make his own schedule without, you know, you going to burn the earth. You don't need to do that. And this yeah. is where you can see, too, how the other Trotskyite networks around Jabotinsky, who, by the way, Benjamin Netanyahu's father was the personal secretary of wow. Vladimir Jabotinsky. Vladimir Jabotinsky and Trotsky were like this. But Jabotinsky was Ukrainian, Bolshevik, hardcore anarchist. He got arrested. Both of them got arrested in 1905 for organizing the first attempted overthrow of the Russian government.
Right.
After 1905, when they were out of prison, one of them was deployed to, again, take control and set up your fifth column inside of Russia as a deep state. That was Trotsky. And Jabotinsky was set up to go and advance a particular variation of Judaism around political Zionism with a Nazi-like worldview of what was known as Greater Israel, that God ordained that the Jewish people should receive a homeland, Zion, return back, but it wouldn't be the small area that the British Mandate of Palestine agreed upon. It's not that, and that the UN finally like put their stamp on later on. It was actually really big. It's actually, if you look at the Jabotinsky map of what Israel should be, it's like a big chunk of Turkey, Iraq, Syria, goes into Iran. It's huge. That's like Greater Israel. The same sort of thing. And so this is, and in their view, the chosen people became this like Ubermensch, this better than human This Nietzschean, you know, like that's why we're the chosen people. And they spun this idea, they poisoned it from a more healthy Judaism, which had it in a humble way, like we're chosen by God to be, this is what the good Jews have always said, if we're the chosen people by God, we're chosen to be the first in morality, to be the first, the best people morally, and to be inspiring for other people to become better. That was the good, but right. They turned that into, and they made it a blood and soil cult, which, and this gets back to how these atheistic, anti-human Trotskyites perverted certain religious modalities to get political effects, because people think of Vladimir Jabotinsky as if he was a Jew. He was a radical anti-human. He basically said, okay, we will make our strain of political Zionism into a cult, a new religion, a blood and soil religion, kind of like the Banderites in Ukraine today. Ukraine became right. a blood and soil cult. And as an effect, though we deny that the Messiah came the first time 2,000 years ago, we also believe that if we can burn the earth, or if the earth gets burned, the Messiah will come for the first time. And so you see the convergence of these hardcore political like Zionists around Netanyahu converging with the Dick Cheney, right. Wolfowitz, fake Trotskyite type neocons on the other side, in which really destroyed a lot of good potential throughout the 1970s, 80s, 90s, even today. And both of them kind of believe in the same thing. Just one believes that if we burn the earth and do God's will, the Messiah will come back the second time. The other side believes, okay, if we just burn the earth, the Messiah will come for the first time. But all of them have the same effect of purgative violence, scorched earth, and it's Trotskyism. It's and the effect is ultimately to destroy the United States. They act like they're American patriots, but the intention has always been to undo the U.S. from within by having the U.S. take on the characteristics of its own antithesis.
Yeah, I mean, that's where we are. Like, I mean, when you put all these dots together, it's shocking. And I believe both Bush's, Obama and Clinton were all, you know, involved in this, in where we are now. We got here because it was one building after the other, building after the other. And now we're at a place where, you know, when you go back to Warburg and Schiff and the money back then that was involved in all of this. And then we're still finding that there's a tremendous amount of money. I mean, this last bill, anyone who signed this betrayed America, as far as I'm concerned. But then, like, this amount of money that they're putting in again into war, into militarizing the world, into, I mean, at what point, because I was also looking into U.S. aid. I mean, this is why is USAID not totally audited there? And you know, what's crazy, Matt, about all these groups, we talk about National Endowment for Democracy, USAID, CIA, they claim to be that they're the ones looking into corruption. But if you go and you dig into especially USAID, they are the ones that are, and you know, and it's crazy because even with these Twitter files that just came out yesterday, they just keep coming. You're looking through it and you're seeing all these groups, including, you know, the State Department, CIA, CISA, FBI, everyone saying, you know, this misinformation, disinformation. It's like the same story about Russia, about China, about, you know, we have to stop this. And it's them giving the information. I mean, we are at a place in America where I don't think most people, trust anything that's coming out of our government or TV or anything. And people just kind of feel like we're stuck with it, which we're not. But B, I feel like people are starting to realize that the endless war scenario only hurts the United States, the people of the United States, the people of the world. And bigger than that, people are making a lot of money and it's disappearing and it's going into their family coffers. I mean, it's like as if everyone forgets that Ukraine was this majorly corrupt place. You bring it up in your article, but also Zelensky and his benefactor, Kolomoisky, were in the Paradise Panama Papers, all this stuff. They've been, you know, Burisma, all of that. And here we are at a point where they're starting to really, I feel like, do what they did in Ukraine, in Taiwan. Because we just had, I mean, at what point do the people of the United States say not in our name? Because they're spinning the Taiwan story. And when you go into this and then you look at that document, when they kind of changed to we're going to be the empire of the world and we're going to do it with war and weapons and, you know, strategically and the whole planet. And it looks like they've tried to do that. But right now it appears to be failing. At the same time, they just signed a bill to give a ton of money to Taiwan. I believe Taiwan's the size of Maryland. So what is going on really in Taiwan? And is this another, look, all these wars at the end of the day, look, Syria, they're just trying to stay there, where Russia's going in and negotiating Syria with Turkey. But why are we there anyway? Why aren't the American people, you know, the billionaire class, the oligarchs can get people in the street to march over Black Lives Matter and the Women's March, which I still don't know what that was about, or abortion or all of that. But they can't. But the people of the United States don't rise up and say, not in our name, no more wars. That's not worth it. What are we, why are we doing this? Like, so if you could just kind of tell my audience a little bit, what is going on with Taiwan? Cause the spin is so ridiculous. And now that we see the Twitter drops, we know that we're not, we're never going to get the truth from social media or the real news, because that's the way that they've been playing it all this time.
Yeah. I mean, people really, I mean, have to learn how to increase their ability to see with their mind's eye with, you know, instead of just relying upon, being spoon-fed information by trustworthy news agencies that we thought we could rely on for decades. No, it's time that we, I think a lot of people have woken up to the reality that was a fraud. Now we have to do a lot more mind work, which is good. That's the way you have a citizenry. And Ben Franklin and the founding fathers always intended that the only way a democracy, a democratic republic was going to function is if you have an actively minded citizenry who can think about these types of broad issues that we're not used to thinking about, but we have to start fast because we've wasted a lot of time. So people are getting better at that. There's a huge crash course of learning happening across the board. I'm loving that. I appreciate that a lot. That's good. So back to Taiwan, there is a lot of confusion about that, but anybody who looks, well, first of all, the NDAA did allocate something like $12 billion of loans to Taiwan for the explicit purpose that the Taiwanese government will purchase U.S.-made, like Lockheed Martin, weapons, which have to be paid back within 5 years. So it's kind of like one of these, cover packages to Ukraine. Right. Most of the Ukraine money that we've given are really loans that we will expect to be extracted from the Ukrainian people, you know, in the years ahead. Which is why BlackRock has been, you know, selected to be the conduit to manage the entire Ukrainian government and economy at both here at the upcoming Davos conference and beyond. So it's a fraud. They don't care about the Taiwanese people. They don't care about the Ukrainian people. Like we said, it's just an extraction gig, and to use them essentially as a proxy for a belligerent saber rattling that could go hot fast. With what Team B put forth regarding the flexible response doctrine, which is still under Biden revived the Obama flexible response, which allows for the U.S. to utilize its nuclear strike forces, even if you're attacking a non-nuclear opponent. So that's where Putin has had to say, well, if Biden wants to do that, he's forcing us to have some form of symmetrical doctrine, which Russia doesn't want to. But that's what we're told by the media, you know, that is just like Putin is threatening to nuke the world. So blah. But all that to say, $12 billion for Ukrainian Taiwanese weapons, another $11.5 billion towards what's called the Pacific Deterrence Initiative to counteract malign Chinese influence in China's own backyard, which, by the way, the State Department itself, the U.S. government, State Department still recognizes Taiwan as a part of China, one China. That's still officially, officially. That didn't change. So China's obviously concerned by the fact that you have the growth, and also they want to bring in as part of the NDAA of 2023, Taiwan into becoming a participating military participant in the upcoming 2024 Rim of the Pacific Military War Games led by the United States and Australia. And also Japan, which is seeing its own Nazi fascist Japanese revival going on there with 50,000 U.S. troops stationed in Japan, with 28,000 troops stationed in South Korea, where there's U.S. biolabs utilizing all sorts of crazy weaponized anthrax that have gone public. And China is sitting there watching 100,000 U.S. troops with U.S. military industrial colonies all around their perimeter. Encircling them and building a military defensive shield, or actually more of an offensive shield, with missile strike forces, which even Japan has just doubled its military spending budget this year too, which I allude to very quickly, which is part of the Taiwan thing. You can't separate that.
Okay.
Which now involves Japan, for the first time since World War II, being allowed by its own constitution to launch an attack on another country, which it formerly was not allowed to do because of the whole, you know, killing millions of civilians in World War II fascist thing.
That's
now different. And they're buying up U.S. long-range missiles for preparation of an attack on China. So China's very concerned that all this stuff is bubbling all over its perimeter. And so they are working very hard to try to stop that. Now, the thing is, we are being led to believe, because, again, Americans and Canadians are reading a lot of media from all sources that are telling them that China is the new global supervillain trying to expand and create a one world government. That's what Steve Bannon is saying. They're trying to project power. Now, this is Freudian projection. If you actually look at the data, the evidence, China only has two military bases outside of its border. The USA has over 900. It has zero bioweapons infrastructure outside of its border, and it only has two BSL-4 labs inside of China. The US has over 320 built up since 9/11. And the difference is China has never actually, at least I can't see any evidence, in the last 40 years, funded any regime change of any other government outside of China. I don't see any evidence of that. Whereas I see the list of leaders assassinated and their governments overthrown since World War II by the CIA and MI6, it's a long, bloody list. So it seems like what the Belt and Road Initiative is trying to do is solidify China along with its allies, Russia being its key number one ally, also now increasingly Iran, also now increasingly Turkey, which is getting on board with resolving its differences with Syria, because Turkey, as well as Saudi Arabia, insane Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states are increasingly coming to realize that they are all disposable and can be flushed. Erdogan, who has played a very nefarious game over the past years, survived a coup d'etat attempt, right? Where he, at a certain point, after shooting down a Russian jet, which almost brought us into nuclear war with Russia in 2015, December 26, 2015, Turkey shoots down a Russian jet. Turkey is a NATO member. If Russia had actually acted like that was an act of war and it was over Syrian territory, well, that would have been Article 5 of NATO, which would have been a collective security agreement that would have forced everybody, US, Canada, everybody, to join the fight with Russia. Now, Turkey was smart. And 2 weeks later, Erdogan said, "I'm so sorry." He made a public letter to Putin saying it was a big mistake. Really sorry. That changed everything, because 2 weeks after that, there was an attempted coup d'etat led by a CIA asset named Fethullah Gulen, who's kind of like a Trotskyist, what I was telling you about Trotsky running this fascist fifth column in Russia. Sort of like that. Fethullah Gulen is a U.S.-protected, exiled Turkish billionaire with a cult following. He's kind of like a pseudo-Gnostic religious leader with a giant complex of followers and devotees embedded within the Turkish military, academia, bureaucracy. And he's based in the United States in a giant compound overseeing a multi-billion dollar empire, kind of like the same guy who runs New Tang Dynasty, which is run by the head of the Falun Gong, Li Hongqi.
Oh, right, yeah.
Living in this 420-acre compound in New York State, overseeing a multi-billion dollar enterprise, which includes, by the way, Epoch Times, which does good work on some things in terms of domestic politics, by the way. I'm not denouncing that. But foreign policy, there's poison there. And so Li Hongqi, another guy expelled from China, who believes he's interfacing with aliens, who can levitate, read minds, heal people with his touch, and is battling intergalactic aliens who have taken over human society and caused us to become corrupt by giving us science and technology, which he says are all corruptions caused by aliens trying to subvert our traditional values. That's Li Hongji's interview with Time magazine in 1999. So you got all of these U.S. protected, weird cultish, kind of like Scientology, Fabian Society ideologues installed, running fifth columns inside of China, inside of Turkey, inside of other countries.
Wow.
Right. And at 2016, that in Turkey was activated to kill and overthrow Erdogan, only because of Russia's FSB did Erdogan have like 30 minutes of forenotice that he was able to get on a helicopter, save his ass, and the Turkish people, who were not who didn't drink this Kool-Aid, stopped the military coup in Turkey. But Erdogan came out of this process realizing he's got a lot more in common with Saddam Hussein than he thought he did. And he was not as secure as he thought he was. And he began to behave in a much more rational way, which leads us now to today, where Russia and China have brokered diplomatic bridge building between Turkey and Syria for the first time, where they're rebuilding their relationships. You have also Iran and Saudi Arabia, who have been rivals, pitted at each other's throats for decades, are building now they're reopening embassies in each other's countries, rebuilding some harmonic collaborative policy.
Right.
And I mean, this is a process which is very constructive and good. But we are all either ignorant of it, or we're being given such spin that is making it sound like this is all terrible and China and Russia are out to destroy our friends and allies in the Middle East by what? Helping them talk to each other and build infrastructure? Is that really how that works? I mean, it's just, anyway.
Yeah, and we see that happening right now. I just saw Natalie Winters had an article out about Avril Haines, who's running our national defense intelligence sector, and the head, the counterpart in the UK, really are talking about controlling the narrative, and we have to gain trust, and we have to control the narrative worldwide, they're saying, and how they're going to go about this. Some things were leaked, and it's at this point, control the narrative from who? Because what is the end game here? We're talking about now Iran, China, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, you know, India, Pakistan, all these countries, right? North Korea, they're all out there saying the U.S. is our enemy, you know, where these people are not talking. They're looking at the U.S., you know, for all these years, we presented ourselves, at least to the people of the United States, as we were everyone's friend. You know, we were going around the world protecting democracy and saving nations. It seems like all these people have gotten together openly and are speaking with one another out loud to the rest of the world, saying the U.S. is the problem and we're going to go forward without the U.S. And not that I the people of the United States need to know this, but I'm starting to get to a place where what stops them from all this instigation and all this money? What stops these countries from attacking us here?
Well, I think that a lot of these countries, well, first of all, two things. This is the first time, I think, in recent history that a whole bunch of different nations, and you just listed a bunch of them that include Turkey, Saudi Arabia, it includes Syria, it includes Russia, China, Iran, it includes a whole bunch of countries have all, for the first time, sort of gotten together with leading representatives in the same room to just talk with each other. That never really happened. Everyone was given, under the context of globalization of the 1990s, you know, the New World Order, everybody was being given secret deals with their Anglo-American counterparts, being given promises that if you just go along with this New World Order doctrine, you will be granted certain liberties, certain jurisdictions, controlling a certain part of this post-nation state structure.
Right.
And, you know, the Kurds are going to be promised Kurdistan, and we'll give you a country, and we're going to give the Israelis, we'll give you greater Israel of Jabotinsky, we'll finally give you that, and the Turks, we're going to give you greater Turkey of Parvis Alexander Helfand, you know, another friend of Jabotinsky, we'll give you that, and we'll give the Saudis, we'll give you greater Saudi Arabian zone, and they were promising everybody these things, and finally, everyone got in the same room together, it seems, somewhere along the way, and they realized, wait a minute, you were promised this? I was promised this. Oh, you were promised that? I was promised this. Wait a minute, these kinds of, I think we're all being shafted here. And so.
It's crazy.
And then
that document that you brought up, that from 2000, if you look at that, and I'm all these leaders that are getting together and saying, you know what, we're not inviting the U.S. Let's sit one-on-one and talk. If I'm sitting there, just the leaders that we named talking, or their counterparts, the people that are going to these meetings, and they're looking at the doctrine that Cheney and Rumsfeld and all them actually put on paper, and you're looking at the last 20 years, I'm thinking, well, it's time for all of us to get together and go forward and reject this plan and stop playing with them. That's why I think USAID, like all the five-star trust, all these different things that are out there, there's like all kinds of funds, all kinds of shell companies, all kinds of stuff. that need to be exposed. And I feel like at this point, we have to be honest as citizens of the United States of America about the last 20 years, about the wars and the death and the destruction, and who's it benefiting, and start turning the page. Because here's the point I think we're at. I like your opinion, but I look at the big picture, and I think the people of the United States of America have to grow up and look at the truth about everything, going all the way back to where we're talking, honestly, all the way back. I don't think it's an accident that Tucker on mainstream media for the first time brought out what everyone knew all along about the JFK story is not what it was. It never was. People just moved on. We got to go back to 9/11 and find out what happened there. I feel like transparency and truth and hard truth is the only way forward, because we just keep, there's just so much corruption and crime and contracts and military money and all of this that just gets pushed down and down and down. And I feel like that swamp in DC has a, it's stuck. I don't see how America comes out of this unless the American people demand transparency of what has gone on the last 20 years and who's responsible. And there's some accountability at this point. I feel like we're in a, between a rock and a hard place as the people here, and we have to stand up.
Yeah. No, Mel, I mean, what you're doing is exceptionally important. What General Flynn is doing and other patriots is so important to just bring focus, because people get, I think, just so cluttered with information overload, and they're not able to just take the meditative poise and just focus on the priorities. Where's the game at? What are the pathways that are viable to take us out of this crisis that have worked in the past? Just focus. And and so what you're doing is vital. This, and I think that that's one of the things that the international leaders of various countries, that's one thing that's been giving them, or it's part of their calculus. They saw something that they didn't think was possible with Trump's victory over Hillary, and the fact that there was still a viable, there was something viable within the United States expressing itself with genuine, authentic political power for that period. And still to this day, they still see it bubbling, as disorganized as it is sometimes getting due to misinformation operations and psyops and everything else, but it's still there. So they're praying to God that the US can restore its constitutional, traditional outlook and act like a country which cares about its own self-interest. Russia, China, other countries, they can only work with partners that care about their actual self-interest. Not like the because you got the Hobbesian project for new American century self-interest, which is a false idea of just, I have to suppress everybody in my neighborhood to be my slaves, and that's how I'm going to make my self-interest maintained. No, that creates a high degree of insecurity by stealing from your neighbors and subduing them to your slaves, that your slaves, they kind of hate and fear you. And now you and the security of your kids are less secure because everybody hates and fears you. Whereas if you have like the USA of Abraham Lincoln, Ulysses S. Grant, McKinley, FDR, JFK, well, that's a strong power, but it's a strong power which is expressing
good.
The good, yeah, it wants to help people in poverty become self-sustaining. It wants to help you in Africa, when South America become your own, you know, they could help you really not just receive some fish the way the USA does. It gives bribe money to keep corrupt leaders in power, and maybe some of that trickles down to some poor people, but actually help them develop infrastructure, industry, educational cultures that can stand on their own two feet and fish for themselves.
Right.
That was what JFK was trying to do with Ghana, with all of the other countries he was negotiating with, was to help them. And that's what China, if you actually look at China's economic foreign policy priorities and what they do, don't just look at what we're being told they do, but look at what they're doing. They're actually emitting 10 to 30 year investments into providing educational programs for Ethiopians, Nigerians, people in all over, all of the member countries working on Belt and Road Initiative projects are being pulled. Over a billion people have been pulled out of poverty since 1998. According to official UN statistics, 80% of that comes from what China has done, which is very different from what we have done as the IMF, World Bank, and, you know, oligarchical class, which has just created more poverty despite pouring trillions of dollars into Africa. Why didn't we end poverty? because that was never the intention. It was to create controlled, zones of corruption beholden to Western managers.
Right.
That was always the agenda. If we restored JFK's agenda, it would have had a very different outcome. You could have had a renaissance, right, industrial world all over Africa today with space programs in Africa, going to the moon and beyond. I mean, all of this could have easily have been the case, but we didn't take that path. We let JFK get killed. We let this parasite take over the U.S. It is what took over under, the Trilateral Commission of David Rockefeller, the Malthusians in the 70s. It created the Trotskyite neocons. It created PNAC. It created the biowarfare, everything, 9/11. So all of that was challenged by what Trump awoke. And I think we can do it again, but really have to think about what Matt Gaetz, Jim Jordan, Lauren Boebert. I mean, there's so many patriots right now that are putting their necks out there, and they need a lot of really smart activists.
Yeah, and they're spinning it really hardcore. And again, we have the Davos meeting coming up, but I feel like there's been so much work done to shine a light on these people and really ask, you don't have authority here. Who's behind the scenes pulling back the curtain? I think when BlackRock announced that, I knew this in 2019 because Zelensky told the World Economic Forum and Larry Fink and BlackRock, use Ukraine as you need, basically, back well before Russia went in there. Just recently, I think you wrote about it too, Merkel came out and said the Minsk Accords were just to buy time. Like, she just says it out loud. No big deal at this point. I just think we're at a point where we could have that renaissance. We could take all this money that they're sending all over the world and redirect it and put it towards good and not war, and put it towards a lot of the stuff you're talking about. We know all over Africa, South America, the Middle East, these places, because of the technology we have and because of the advances we have, could all be thriving. And the America first, we've talked about it before. If every country was allowed to be that country first and stopped being manipulated from the outside, then the whole concept of war would go away. And I know that that sounds Pollyannish, but I believe most humans want to live their lives, don't want millions of people to die for no reason. And we all know at this point, the United States of America, we don't gain anything from these wars. The people of the United States gain nothing. And I just think it's really time. Now, since we only have a little time left, you're a solutions guy. And I keep thinking, God, the billionaire oligarchs that run this country that are aligned with the Davos crew and the World Bank and all them, and they mobilized different movements in America that got people up, got people walking around. I feel like we need to mobilize a movement in America to say enough's enough of spending our money and going to war without our consent. Because none of the, I can't believe that more America, and that would require people to get out of a team, to not identify as I'm left or right or Republican or Democrat or this or that. It would have to be like a true Team America. But I feel like we could do that right now if people just threw off the chains and the blindfolds. And I think there's a lot of people that would do that. But, there's always the people that just want to be left alone. But I don't think at this point anyone is being left alone, even if they think they are.
Yeah, no, that's the thing, right? The wildest irony is that we are the majority by far, probably 80% or more Americans are of the view, their hearts and minds are of the view that they don't want war, they don't want economic injustice, they don't want to be raped by a bunch of financial parasites that are setting up a giant economic collapse. They don't want any of these things. What Biden represents is such a fraction of minority.
Right.
Trying to project using their instruments of perception management, because they do have that, the idea that they're the majority, but they're not. They talk about the international rules-based order or consensuses. There's nothing behind the words. It represents the tiniest faction of technocrats and anti-humanists who don't care about people. That's why they have a disdain for populism, right? They say, oh, Trump is a populist.
Yeah.
What does that mean? That just means
there's a whole section. I tell people to go to weforum.org and look up global governance strategic section. And there's a whole section on how being a nationalist or a populist, and they even say Trump, they say Orban, some other people, is the worst thing. And that to be a global citizen is the only way forward. And, you know, and coming up is their natural asset class, where this grew a small group of billionaires and trillionaires that are, you know, pretend walking around like they're the Fourth Reich, you know, these that you talk about, these anti-human, anti-freedom, anti-God, you know, at this point, not only are they the minority, but I also believe that they are their arrogance. And that, like I said to somebody yesterday, I said, while they dumb down all of our kids, they dumb down their kids too, because we see you and you're about to have a big show in 2 weeks acting like, I tell everyone should be watching the World Economic Forum, because they feed all this stuff onto the internet and like 8,000 people usually watch it or less. I think we should have, 20 million people watching it, sitting there laughing at them, you know, like, well,
But that's the other thing, right? They want to project the idea that they're these the voice of the majority of the world. And it's like, yeah, you go to like their biggest, most important conferences that they're live streaming, and nobody's watching it. Nobody cares about this stuff. So, I mean, at the end of the day, we are many, they are few. We have justice and truth on our side. And people really just do need to get their priorities intact and organize in a more intelligent manner than they have tended to do, because for too long, we've been sort of like sitting on the sidelines in kind of comfort, but not really, you know, living a paycheck to paycheck in most cases, but without the sense that, okay, there was always this idea that this could go on forever. We could extend this forever. And now, no. We're realizing it's the end of a system. We've reached a threshold, a boundary condition. So that doesn't work anymore. The idea of, like, right now, The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation just had, you know, tabletop exercises over invoking bail-in to steal people's money.
Right.
To bail in the banks that are about to collapse. Yeah. And you hear the actual recorded discussions of these idiots, these clowns, saying, you know, maybe we should tell people about it, but in such a way that they don't really we don't invoke fear over the banking system being unviable, because we're afraid. But that's because we're smart. But the unsmart people shouldn't know that they should be not afraid, because if they're afraid, that's going to cause the bank run and the system's going to collapse. So, and it's, you hear these guys just lying to themselves and doing mental gymnastics uncomfortably. The reality is the system that they themselves are wired to defending is designed to blow. And, you know, if you had, like, Donald Trump outlined on several key speeches starting in 2017, the need to restore Glass-Steagall. That's a concrete action that would break up the banks. We should have done that a long time ago. Bill Clinton destroyed this thing in 1999. Donald Trump, he made a lot of enemies on Wall Street because he said that.
Right.
But if you got a mass base, and he didn't find, I don't think there weren't enough informed patriots in America at the time who understood the import of what that sort of thing means. So they didn't give the type of support he felt he needed to receive to really run with that and make it a weapon. But that would be a serious thing. If you want to protect ourselves and our children from the oncoming collapse and make sure that only these too big to fail assholes who gambled and lost receive the pain and not the commercial banks and our savings and pensions, that's one thing that would be a very important first step in an arsenal of recovery. Yeah. The idea of, you know, looking what Trump did. I mean, just study what Trump was doing. What were his key policies? Getting out of the World Health Organization. Get a population with a program exactly based on what Trump was doing, which scared the oligarchy because it revived actual traditional American constitutional policies, breaking free of NATO demands on the U.S. military. That's key. Working with Russia and with China as economic allies in mutual development, that's good. We're going to need a new financial architecture globally anyway. The current global architecture is designed to blow. So is it going to be one based upon nation states cooperating, or is it going to be based upon oligarchs out to reduce global population levels to what their climate models say is acceptable, like maybe a billion lives should be permitted according to the Club of Rome?
Right.
So will it? Who will it serve? And so if you can get the sort of demand from an educated activist base and citizenry that calls for, in a, you know, strategically, we need a new, let's call it, you know, some people have called it a Bretton Woods policy. This is what Franklin Roosevelt initiated with other allies at the end of World War II to create a new economic architecture premised around global development. That didn't happen because Roosevelt died, his allies got destroyed, and his enemies took over. The Trotskyites ended up dominating. And so the thing ended up getting kind of misused. But in principle, that way of thinking can function. China and Russia have mutual development to build lunar colonies for scientific and other investigations. That's great. Why not join them on doing things like that, or mining asteroids, which are full of all sorts of rare earths and other things, which could benefit human beings for decades and decades and centuries even. Those things get us out of our closed, uncreative grid. You know, they introduce new variables, because the universe is a big, creative, beautiful, loving place that God created. So why not be instruments of God's creation by going out into our environment called the universe, exploring what God created in all of its beauty, finding the fruits of said discoveries, benefit human beings, bringing us closer to God, you know, in just applying new ideas to make life better for people. And in so doing as well, we find what brings us into harmony with cultures and religions and ethnic groups that may sound different from us, but we're all human. We're all in this together. Let's find points of common ground. And so that's something we can do. I'm hoping that Trump can bring back a clarity of what those policies were, starting with Glass-Steagall. That would be good. Maybe getting people to, you know, organize meetings, town hall events, things like that, the way you're doing it. I mean, that's great. Educate. And that's all we can do, is just focus on being instruments of the good and hope it catches on, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's the bottom line. And the truth is, right now, these people that are installed there, they're installed there, I believe, to destroy America from within and from the outside. Mm. But I, like you said, I don't think the rest of the world really wants that. And if we do listen to what these people are actually saying, Lavrov and some of these guys from China, but all over the world, if you just listen to what they're saying, they don't want to cut America off. It is the people that are running this country right now, and the oligarchy, billionaire, trillionaires aligned with the great resetters, that want America cut off. But the American people have to realize we still have a chance. We have a shot. It's still our country, and we can stand up. But like you said, we got to be focused, educated, use common sense, critical thinking, and get together and say, you know, there's way more of us than them, and we don't want to be a party to endless wars and you know, government manipulation and mind control. In that, I'll let you go in a second, but in that big $1 trillion bill and the Defense Authorization Act and all of that, there's a huge chunk in there about mind control and behavior modification that people don't even see, and AI and all of this. So the people have to realize it's not getting better if we don't stand up now. You know, that's not the plan.
Still, no, absolutely. Yeah, that's a whole thing unto itself, right? The mind wars, psyop. Yeah, no, that's a big thing. But the key is when you can start laughing at it, right? Stop. Yeah. Don't treat the thing like it's too serious, because at the end of the day, it's being run by nutcases who are projecting their own insane dysfunctions internally onto the world and trying to make us adapt to their worldview.
Right. Now,
the world doesn't work that way.
Exactly.
It's a much more beautiful, reasonable place than the dystopic, messed up Hobbesian universe that they're trying to create. So when you don't take them too seriously, they don't have a fraction of the so-called powers that they are trying to get us to think that they have, because they want us to see them as if they were these gods, these immortal gods of Olympus above the humans. That's how they, with powers to control your emotions, to control your mind using all sorts of EM fields and things that they put into the fluids that are injected into our bodies due to little pandemic things. Look, they want these things, but they are so far from any of the AI, artificial intelligence, all of this stuff. It's unbelievable. They want us to more just shut down and mentally castrate ourselves out of fear of what they can do, rather than realize that they actually don't. They're inbred idiots who are uncreative. They're barbaric as sin, and they're not fit for, like, their mode of thinking and feeling and shaping identities and cultures is not fit for God's creation. It's just not. There's something better for us. It's not this.
That's exactly it. There's something way better for us, but we have to be the stewards of making sure that we go that direction, which is what you're great at. And I'm your biggest fan. Can you tell my audience everywhere they can find you? And you're popping up all over. And I always say, I got it. Matt, I want him to come back here. I want him to talk about that here. But you are amazing. You're talking about many different topics at one time. But the best part about you is they all intersect. You and Cynthia both have this ability to pull together so much information that people can really understand it. So I read your Substack every day. But can you tell everyone where they can find you, your links, and all of that?
Cool. Thank you, Mel. I come from you. I mean, that's just, I'm very honored to be your friend and ally as well. And and you've just done exceptional work. I've watched a lot of your speeches, and I think that you are really providing a serious light and beacon of leadership that is so vitally needed to provide that clarity to a lot of people who want to put out this fire. And thank you very much for those kind words. And thank you for what you do.
You too.
And for people who want to, subscribe to the Substack, MatthewErick.substack.com is my Substack. There's free and paid. The books are all available on CanadianPatriot.org. My wife's books, as well as the Clash of the Two Americas, which I've co-written with my wife. Volume 4 will be out in about 2 weeks.
I can't wait. You'll be back to talk about it.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Then there's the last thing I'd say, RisingTideFoundation.net. Is a lot of the educational cultural stuff to really beef up the mind on a more we're trying to just focus on really having a cultural vibe which is far different from anything that we've been given in the current globalized culture of mediocrity. So that's risingtidefoundation.net, where we do weekly meetings, and if people want to be a part of the live Zoom lectures every Sunday, send us an email at info@risingtidefoundation.net, and we'll make sure you get those.
Yeah, and I'll say, if you are a parent out there that has a child of high school age or college age that you feel like needs a little more education, that Rising Tide Foundation, their programs are so amazing and teach so much more than anyone's learning right now in academia, as far as I can see. So those are awesome opportunities for parents to help their children learn some real history and put together dots themselves. So thank you so much, my friend. I will see you soon. I'm very excited for the next book. I was on with somebody last week who said that he didn't realize he had your book, and he pulled it out. And I was like, see, I go, all you have to do is read Matt Arendt's books and things make a lot more sense. Thank you so much, my friend. I'll see you soon.
See you. Bye.
Hey, it's Andrew Sorcini at Beverly Hills Precious Metals. I'm here at the Mel Kay Show. Last year, we helped so many patriots out there protect themselves against inflation with gold and silver. In 2023, we can show you how to preserve what you have, avoid further loss, and position you for greater things for your investments. So the best way for us to help you is for you to go to melkgold.com, fill out the online form, and put in as much information about yourself as you possibly can. The more information, the more we can help you. So do it right away. The time is crucial as we head into central bank digital currencies. We can show you how to protect your 401k or your IRA, and the costs are minimal.
Hey guys, I'm here with Dr. Sherwood, and we are very excited about 2023, and we want you to be in your best shape, really ready to get out there and enjoy this time and really get out there, stand up, fight back, be involved. Dr. Sherwood has lots of plans for making you as healthy as possible. Thank you, Dr. Sherwood. Can you tell my audience what you got in store for them?
Absolutely. It is time in 2023 to reclaim our sovereignty, namely health sovereignty. So I want people to go to Sherwood.tv/MelK. We have a lot of plans that are there for people. They can get advantage of those and take the first action steps. But I want people to go check out our free bi-monthly webinar that you can register for, and you can see what we do, how we do it. You can meet my queen, my prime rib / spare rib, Dr. Michelle, all of that. And we work together to help you achieve your best health. So again, that is twice a month, our free webinar at Sherwood.tv/MelK. Put all that in there, just like you see on the screen right now. And we want to make sure that you get those webinars into your life, into your heart, into your mind. And we want to work with you so you can achieve your best health. And remember, let's get our health sovereignty back.
Exactly. And Dr. Sherwood has great programs to jumpstart this year with everything you need. Thank you so much, Dr. Sherwood. I will see you on the road.
Sounds great. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Hey, Patriot pals, Rob Reilly here. One of the most important things Mel and I do in this war between good and evil is traveling the country, meeting fellow patriots like yourselves. We share stories, resources, gain new tools, make new friends, and get activated to take back our freedom for God and country. Go to themelkshow.com, events, and come join us. You will have an amazing experience and be reinvigorated to stand for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. As always, God wins. See you there.